But first to Canberra, to Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent of SBS. Anna, welcome to the show.
Thank you, David.
Now, what's going on here with defence? The government is taking charge, is it, of a huge whack of the defence budget. Now, why?
Well, this has been an ongoing discussion between the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, Pat Conroy, who is the Defence Industry Minister. They've flagged that they're looking across defence to try and work out how to deal with the massive cost blowouts that we're so used to hearing about in defence procurement and try to streamline some of these processes because there is an increasing budget at stake here. And the minister has been, I think, frustrated for some time about how some of these defence projects have unfolded and wanted to have more control and more of a say in how things are being done. So helpfully, he and Pat Conroy have announced today this plan to bring together a number of different procurement and capability organisations or groups, as they're called, to deal with things like new purchases, sort of missiles, airborne drones, all kinds of things that defence is now trying to bring to life to protect the nation, and wanting to put them into eventually an agency that can directly engage with him as minister, as opposed to being underneath the Secretary of the Defence Department. Now, this agency will speak to both the Defence Department and the government, but the government will have much more direct say over what is expected to be about 40% of the defence budget. When you think about what's happening in the next decade, David, it's now around $56 billion. By 2034, this is $100 billion. So 40% of that is a pretty significant whack that the government is going to have more direct control over.
But Anna, the soldiers can't be happy with this direct government supervision of such a fundamental defence process, buying weapons.
I think there is certainly some early frustration, but there's also a sense from those who have been watching these areas closely, analysts in this space, that something did need to change about how these processes were unfolding because of the major cost blowouts. And in a way, it does force the government to be more directly accountable. But I think not only will there be that kind of worry within military circles about what this might mean from a control point of view, but it's also not the only big change that is on the horizon for defence. In the next couple of weeks, we're also expecting to see a defence real estate document be released, which will recommend future decisions around some of the big military assets across the country that might be on pretty prime land for housing development. And this is another issue within defence at the moment. What is going to happen with the decision-making over some of those really spectacular locations that are very much seen as the heart of Australia's defence force, but might also be wanted by the government to make good on their proposals to build significant, million houses. That's part of their election promise too. So there are a number of fronts that the Defence Minister is going to be working on to try and find common ground with the military and at the same time to make these tough decisions.
It's been a week of weddings and prospective weddings in Canberra, hasn't it? I mean, obviously the Prime Minister getting married, in his garden, touching, simple ceremony. But the other is the looming union between Pauline Hanson and her suitor. They sat down, as you saw, and had a few steaks cooked on a sandwich press. It was a beautiful, touching scene. How do you rate the chances of the marriage of Barnaby Joyce and Pauline Hanson?
Well, I can't believe we're skipping over the Prime Minister's wedding to Jodie Hayden so quickly.
Oh, well, look, let's go back there. I just thought it was
the Prime Minister's official residence gardens, where he apparently DJed and had a two-tiered cake. But no, we will move on to matters of political.
And Mike Bowers, photographer, had an exclusive of a lifetime.
Well, you know, I also had the exclusive over the fence where you couldn't see a thing.
You climbed a fence, you poor
thing. Everyone had their vantage point. No, I didn't climb any fences. I stood next to a fence line and we saw nothing but greenery. However, on to the more sort of consequential union to the state looming, of the parliament.
The looming union, making Pauline Hanson an honest woman. It's just an intriguing prospect.
Well, I think it's not something to make light of in many ways. This is a really serious political movement that Barnaby Joyce truly believes is happening in Australia. It sort of reflects some of the things that are happening across the world, from Donald Trump as US president to Nigel Farage in the UK. And we can go into sort of the details of how the different political systems operate and how they don't necessarily match up. But there is a view from someone who has been in politics for a very long time and prides himself as someone who is somewhat tapped into and connected with a particular cohort in the broader electorate, who has genuinely come to the view that the One Nation brand aligns with what Barnaby Joyce wants to do with his political career and gives him more of an opportunity to be at the front of a press conference, not on the back bench and not invited to the press conference, which is, I think, what he's facing at the moment. So it is a big deal. And as someone who grew up in the seat of New England and who's still got a lot of friends and family there, my understanding is that One Nation is growing in support and is growing in its prominence in some parts of regional New South Wales. And there is a lot of interest in what's going to happen as a result of that.
Does Joyce see the possibility of One Nation becoming a coalition partner?
I don't genuinely know what's going on in his head, but I do think that he sees this movement as aligning with something that's happening in the broader community.
Yeah.
And I think when you look at what he's prepared to do and how far he's been prepared to go with this, this has obviously been months and months in the making. Map of Australia shaped stakes. It was all very organised, and it's all about sending messages and capturing attention. I think our office, you know, like many across the building, was following it all blow by blow. But then there was this extraordinary moment as Barnaby Joyce was working to leave the Nationals and move potentially to One Nation as early as last week, where he was confronted by the reality of Pauline Hanson's burqa stunt in the Senate. And some of his colleagues really do think that has given him some pause to take a moment before he aligns himself directly with Pauline Hanson, because what happened in the Senate has really shocked a lot of people in the Parliament. Not that Pauline Hanson has done this a second time, but that Barnaby Joyce, who is not seen as sort of fringe in some of his politics at least, would want to completely align himself with a political party that does seem a little bit at odds with what he's stood for in the past.
Because he has a decent record on asylum seekers. He was a great supporter, wasn't he, of the Biloela family?
The Murugappans. He was, and he went against Peter Dutton and he spoke up on their behalf. Just one example isn't enough to kind of suggest that someone has sort of a long-term ambition in a particular frame, but I think Barnaby Joyce has shown on a fairly regular basis that he's been willing to advocate for new migrants to Australia, and he actually comes with an electorate that has a really big migrant population in New England. So there, on a local level, he has shown himself to be someone who is quite sympathetic to the idea of Australia being a multicultural place and an accepting place and not a place to sow sort of the deepest of divisions. And if you want an idea of just how popular or intriguing and compelling the Pauline Hanson stunt was in the Senate last week, I'm not saying popular in terms of people applauding it, but just in terms of people being interested in what happened, the SBS TikTok that was posted online, which had some initial information and then some reaction, I think it's ticking up over 35 million views at this point in time. Perhaps that says something to the algorithm on these platforms, but it also, I think, says something about the fact that, you know, these kinds of crafted events that can be put up by some of these political parties can have huge traction across the world.
Anna, just on the Nationals still, I was intrigued by the anthem that David Littleproud sang to the splendours of land clearing and the wonderful way in which farmers no longer illegally clear land, that's still, is it, a big issue for farmers in Australia and for the Nationals, the kind of right to clear land?
There is a lot of conjecture over this, and there are a lot of different viewpoints about what is and isn't appropriate on the land clearing front. I mean, what happened with the environment protection changes that Labor and the Greens have backed in, you know, when you get down to the specifics of what's in the legislation that's now been agreed to, so it stops vegetation being cleared from within 50 metres of the Great Barrier Reef catchment. And anywhere across Australia that hasn't been cleared for 15 years, it stops land clearing on some level there as well. And we've had not only, you know, the Environmental Defenders Office, for example, call Australia a global deforestation hotspot, but also, you know, more hard-headed economic types who've been looking at this, like Ken Henry, also saying irresponsible land clearing is a major issue in the country. However, within the world of national supporters and within the farming community, not only is there a diversity of views, but there's also a real pushback against this sense that farmers shouldn't have the right to you know, ensure that their land can be used for agriculture, for food and fibre, that there shouldn't be an ability to make way for agricultural development. And the other issue that has
no
really
matter what.
Well, there are many farmers who follow all the rules, and there are also farmers who have decided to become carbon farming front runners, and they do genuinely have properties that they don't work or they don't, you know, use for agricultural purposes. So there are different sides of this coin, but there's also the reality that for some farming communities and from some people that I've sort of spoken to on this, they say, so the government won't allow us to clear our land, but the government does want big renewable industrial level projects to come into regional areas and lock up agricultural land. And that's been a bit of a lightning rod for some people around their frustration with seeing the government as hypocritical on some of these issues. They're not seeing it from the sort of protection of nature point of view as much as the government says, you know, that renewables can be a reason to lock up land, but that we can't do it the same thing in terms of putting out our view that certain land should be used for agriculture. It is a tough area. The Nationals know it. They know that there's a lot of support out there. And, you know, when you look at some of the commentary in the wake of this deal, for example, from the Australian Forest Products Association, they gave evidence to the inquiry. They, you know, I would say have a lot to do with the National Party lobbying wise. They are adamant that every harvested tree is replaced. But you and I both know that it's not the same thing to fell, you know, a 20-year-old tree and plant a new one. Like that's the troubling reality for sort of the protection of nature here.
Now, Anna, very briefly, two ceremonial questions of importance. Firstly, Malcolm Turnbull's portrait. What do we think of that?
Well, I was interested to see who showed up to see the unveiling. It's a very big deal when a portrait is unveiled at Parliament House, and there's a lot of speeches beforehand. They really build the anticipation because we've had two recently, two unveilings. And I think that the audience for the painting was interesting, but then the unveiling of it, for me, it was, you know, deliberately sparse and deliberately I think designed to pop off those really dark wooden walls of the building. Many people have made different things about the hand gestures. And,
well, they're empty. I mean, his hands are empty.
Or you might say it's an outstretched, you know, approach to say, walk with me.
Now, look, the clock is
the
about
artistic direction.
The clock is about to knock us off very quickly indeed. The state funeral for Richo, still going ahead?
As far as I'm aware, it is happening next week. Power broker, caught up in scandal, courted scandal, not universally admired. And within the Labor Party, there is some concern about this. But at the same time, the Prime Minister has called him a hero, a Labor legend. This is absolutely going ahead.
Buried with honours. Thank you, Anna Henderson. And note, this is Anna's last appearance for the year. So we will look forward to welcoming you back in 2026.
Thank you, David. Anytime.
Anna, thanks. I've been talking to Anna Henderson, Chief Political Correspondent at SBS.